Hello, everyone. This is Alex Goff with OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com, and this show is starting off slightly different today. As many of you may know, I haven't recorded a show in a little while, and I completely bungled up the recording studio on Blog Talk Radio. So we're recording the show via Skype. I am joined by a good friend of mine, Ben Miller. And Ben, what's going on?
You know, same old. Nice day here in Los Angeles. I'm anticipating the weekend of shows and things that are coming up, you know?
So while you live in Los Angeles tonight, you had Milwaukee on your mind as your Bucks had a professional basketball game. And what was the result of that?
Well, the game was actually called off early. It's odd. NBA doesn't normally do that, but no result for that game. So I'm sure they'll replay it later in the season.
Was this like the WWF when they used to call matches due to curfew, or what was the exact reason they called off this game?
Indeterminate. You know, luckily there's no way for people to access information like that themselves, so they'll just have to trust my recap of it.
Well, there you go. Ben Miller providing only the real facts. And he maintains a Milwaukee Bucks blog called Bucks Forest, and we talked about that last time. What is going on over at Bucks Forest? What is the thing that the people are talking about when it comes to the Milwaukee Bucks?
Well, the Bucks had a bad season last year. They have new owners this year, and they've kind of gone young. And so at least what I've been talking about, because I'm the only one who actually writes posts at BucksForest.com, is I'm very happy with the emergence of the Greek freak Giannis Antetokounmpo as a good big, as sort of a power forward. I'm very displeased right now with our new draft pick, Jabari Parker. He was the second pick in the draft, and at the moment, he seems to have bust written all over him. It's early. He's a young kid, but I'm not particularly happy with him yet.
I think a lot of people remember that Wiggins was supposed to be the next LeBron James, but before Wiggins, I can remember Jabari Parker as a younger kid, practically, getting the same type of treatment in the Sports Illustrated magazines. So is it from that era that you're disappointed of him, or was it what you saw of him at Duke, or what exactly are you displeased with when it comes to young Jabari?
I don't really follow the high school aspect anymore like I did years and years ago, because I remember LeBron being touted in high school. I was not aware of Jabari until he got to Duke, but it was basically when he was at Duke, he was a dominant college player, but he appeared to not be an athlete. And you can be a great NBA player without being an athlete. You know, I think Paul Pierce is not what you would call an elite by NBA standards athlete. Larry Bird's the same thing. There's probably a couple more examples that are out there. But with those guys, they were very, very rare exceptions. Most of the guys who are not athletes who dominate at the college level will turn out to be like a Donyell Marshall, a pretty darn good player, but probably not worthy of being one of the first or second guys selected in a deep draft. And so that's basically it. It's the same thing with Duke that he showed at Duke, the lack of athletic ability. And after watching him in the summer league, I kind of turned the corner, and I was very optimistic, and I thought he would be a great player. Me and I started calling him the modern Larry Legend to friends, you know, because of the whole analogy of a guy who's sort of not a great athlete, but just has the wits about him to become an all-time great. But I really turned on him hard. I don't think he has the wits of Larry Bird or Paul Pierce. I think he's a guy who was super coached up by a dad. And so that put him ahead of the game his whole life in terms of understanding how to play basketball. And in the NBA, there is no such thing as that. Everybody knows how to play basketball in the NBA. Not everybody, but most guys do. So I'm worried that he's going to sort of hit the wall there.
What I find interesting is that you know, college basketball is now becoming very system-oriented, where the same coaches are being successful, I think more so than any other era I can remember, because you're getting these reasonably raw talents. And as long as you can put them in the system, they can be successful in college. And when they get to the pros, you know, it's either they figure it out, either they'll sink or swim. And I think that that's really more predominant now than what it's been in years past. And what's interesting is the importance of international play. Like, if you have the opportunity to play internationally against a wide array of different talents, your game kind of gets accelerated past others who don't get those opportunities.
Yeah, I would agree with all that. The only thing I would add to it is also the influence of AAU. You know, high school basketball doesn't really mean anything anymore. Not nowadays, if you're a guy who's expected to eventually get to the NBA level, where you show your wares as a teenager, you know, at age, let's say, 12 to 18, is in AAU, not in high school. And AAU is a very unstructured environment. You know, it's more or less like college basketball, but for young players, where there's a lot less emphasis on skills and on coaching, a lot more emphasis on recruiting and on kind of, you know, letting the kids have fun, essentially. And that's fine. I don't mean to be critical of that, but what I think it's led to is that a guy like Jabari Parker, who has a dad that drills in how to play basketball and you know, the skills development and things like that, can be ahead of the game despite not being an elite athlete. And I think Shabazz Muhammad, who came out the previous year, was the exact same case. And you know, look, Shabazz Muhammad fell to 15th, but you know, the Bucks saw it fit to draft Jabari with the number 2 pick, and that's what has drawn my ire to thus far in the season on Bucks Forest.
Now, you and I, we started a conversation today because I had posted, we have a local journalist, columnist, commentator named John Ralston, and he was tweeting out about the news that Station Casinos, as of today, I believe, has folded their web poker online. Ultimate Poker, it's called, I believe.
That may be it. It might have been called Ultimate Casino. I don't remember. But yeah, it's basically Station Casinos, which are owned by the same guys that own the UFC, folded their online gaming operation.
And so it's not exactly UFC related, but it kind of is, because it's an arm of, you know, the Fertitta's kind of the Fertitta stronghold that they have. And you had mentioned an Adam Silver op-ed where he wrote about gaming, sports gambling. And I haven't had an opportunity to read the piece yet, Ben, but kind of what was your thoughts on Adam Silver's op-ed?
I was very negative on it, no doubt about it. Number one, look, I don't want to sort of, you know, push my morals on other people or anything like that. And look, I gamble. I'm not morally against gambling on a personal level. I gamble, a number of my friends gamble, but I find that the NBA nowadays is basically just about doing whatever's popular. They have no desire to take a stand on any issue whatsoever. If they see in the press that whatever, Donald Sterling is getting hammered, they're going to hammer Donald Sterling. If they see in the press that the media reacts strongly when there's a fist fight in the middle of a game, then they're going to do a, you know, suspension for 20% of the season or something like that. If you get in a fist fight in the middle of the game, they're going to do a really, really harsh penalty, something that kind of overrides the level of the crime. And I thought this was just another indication of it. The general attitude right now, especially in the media, but probably in the culture at large, is that gambling is a harmless crime, a victimless crime, and that it should be more widely legalized. And that's basically what Adam Silver was saying. He wants a federal anti-gambling law to be repealed so that the states will have the choice to do it themselves. And we all know how huge a fan you are of states' rights, Alex. I hear you talk and tweet about it and post clips of Ronald Reagan down in the deep South promoting states' rights, and I think that's Alex P. Goff but I digress. For those who may not be familiar with Alex's points of view, I'm completely being sarcastic there. So please don't take that as gospel. So the point is, you know, that's kind of his point of view. And what struck me about the story from Las Vegas is just the impracticality of what Adam Silver's saying, because Adam Silver's saying, let's legalize it federally, let's allow states to regulate it, let's use technologies like location tracking and things like that to make sure that someone who is in Utah, where it's banned, would not be able to place a bet with a gambling operation that's located in Nevada or something like that. And you know, they have that stuff. That's what the Fertitta's idea was. And even in a gambling hotbed like Nevada, it failed. And so I just don't buy that's a good way to go about things.
Now, do you believe that maybe, you know, Bill Simmons is one of the biggest sports writers in the country, and he is an avid gambler, talks about it openly on the show, does a weekly podcast where he predicts football lines. Do you believe that Adam Silver maybe sees this as the new opportunity, much in the way that fantasy football has exploded, football and baseball and other sports, maybe that online gaming, they can embrace it, and maybe this will give some kind of boost to the NBA?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that. I mean, look, the reason professional sports exists is because of gambling. Like, at this point, it doesn't matter anymore. Professional sports has grown far beyond just gamblers watching games. But if you go back, whatever it is, 100 years to baseball or professional boxing or whatever, those things happen basically because of gambling, you know, that there were people that liked to bet, and so instead of betting on horses or instead of betting on the numbers racket where you would wait to see the last three digits of the, I think it was the Dow Jones Industrial Average, or it was one of those financial markets averages. That was what the numbers game was. You know, you sometimes hear about the numbers game, but sometimes it doesn't get explained. But instead of betting on one of those things, it's like, okay, let's have these great athletes participate and compete against each other, and we'll attract gamblers. We'll get people to buy tickets and attend the games because they're gambling on them. And so, you know, I get that. I get that that's, you know, a big reason why professional sports exist. But I just feel that it's grown to the point where it's not a good idea to risk your sport on it, to risk your business on it, if the people's tastes change. People's tastes change all the time when it comes to sin. If you look, you know, whatever it is, 60 years ago or something like that, you know, people who were openly homosexual were treated far, far differently than they are today. If you go back 25 or 30 years, people who were regular gamblers, people who gamble on a daily basis, treated very, very differently than they are today. And so it just, to me, is a big risk to say we're going to embrace that as a giant company like, or a giant organization like the NBA. And that was kind of what my comment to you was all about, is I just think, number one, if it was working for the Fertittas, you know, if their small-time version of what Adam Silver is proposing in a lot of states was killing it and it was making a ton of money, I would say, okay, there's justification for Adam Silver to say this. But he's making a risky move, and there's a big old failure happening right now in Nevada. So it just seemed like a silly idea to me.
I want to move on to actually another sport that was created out of gambling, which is professional wrestling.
Yeah.
This has been a really weird week, and I live in Nevada, and gaming is big news here in Nevada. And Caesars is going through a buyout, and they're laying off hundreds of workers. The news just reported tonight, and they're filing for a structured bankruptcy in January. And it is really interesting what gaming's going to look like in this country moving forward. You know, it's hard to imagine Nevada without gaming, and I don't think we'll ever see a Nevada without gaming. But as Caesars Entertainment is one of the big players, and it is interesting to see what they're going through right now, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, the ramifications moving forward on what happens. But professional wrestling Sunday, they're presenting the Survivor Series for free. they've given access to everyone for to the WWE Network. And what are your thoughts on, first of all, that move to entice fans to buy the network? Is giving it out for free, is that enough?
I think it's fine. You know, they're only getting whatever it is, 700,000 buys a month at $10 a month. A $7 million hit is something that the WWE can easily withstand. And in my opinion, it's well worth the risk. It may turn out to be a failure, but I think you got to give it a shot. I mean, my point of view is ultimately what they need is weekly content. Because if HBO only aired Game of Thrones once a month, or Showtime aired Homeland once a month, or any of these paid operations only aired something that was new and of true value to their fan base only once a month, I think they would have real trouble drawing subscribers. I don't know if HBO would go down to 700,000 subscribers instead of 28 million or whatever they're currently at. But they would drop dramatically if they started saying, yeah, you're only going to get your favorite series once a month instead of once a week. And I think that's what WWE needs to do. I think they basically need to go back to the future. They need to book their company the way they used to book it in the 80s. I think they already like making Raw a variety show, essentially. Go with that. And then, you know, SmackDown, you can make that a variety show or whatever. But I really think they need a weekly live wrestling event on the WWE Network. It can be as short as 1 hour. It could be 2 hours is preferable if they think they can fill the content. But that's what I think they need. And my idea, at least, is like I said, to kind of go back to the future 80s or even before the 80s and make the free television show, make Raw essentially a promotion for your weekly quote-unquote house show. In the modern era, the house show isn't the house show. The house show would be the network show. But I would have a live special from a house show, from an arena, every week. You could do it a Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday afternoon, whatever day you want to do it, just choose a day. And that's what I think if they're ever going to hit those type of numbers that they expect to hit. I think if they continue to rely on just one monthly show, I think they're really in trouble. They're really a long shot to hit the numbers they're expecting to hit unless the product gets insanely hot again. You know, if the product's as hot as UFC was in 2007, or if the product's as hot as WWE was in 1998, then sure, maybe they can hit that, you know, 2 or 3 million subscriber number that they were talking about earlier. But if they're just planning on doing it with a lukewarm product, which I think is their hope, I think their hope is that they'll have consistent subscribers that won't crash when the product's not super hot. I really think they need weekly live shows.
I've heard a lot of people discuss different ideas for the WWE Network, but it's like I don't see a lot of movement for any type of ideas moving forward. And I'll give a couple of examples. Is that Brian Alvarez, I remember, it was a few months ago, he has suggested people like Zack Ryder and some of your other creative guys on the roster who have had experience doing web shows, why aren't those guys given opportunities, you know, in the need of cheap programming to do things on the network? And it seems like there's so many different avenues. HBO and Showtime and really all the pay channels, they're moving forward as what's called premier networks, right? So if you look at the ratings on any given evening for some of these shows, they're not going to blow you away if you compare them to the nightly cable average. But what it is that a lot of people subscribe because they don't want to miss these shows. And if WWE Network, if they turn themselves into a prestige network of their own, like on this, only on the WWE Network can you get weekly this, you know, the house show idea Ben Miller just brought up, you know, so-and-so's weekly show. Also, you get NXT weekly. If it was can't-miss stuff that you could only get on the network that was able to draw fans in for a period of time, and you could even run it as seasons so that fans couldn't let their subscription lapse. Because what I find interesting is this was something that I had brought up before the network went online because it seemed the most practical. If I'm a lukewarm fan on World Wrestling Entertainment, I would just do the first 6 months of every year and let it lapse because those are going to be the biggest events, your Royal Rumble and WrestleMania. So coming up with reasons for people to stay during the fall months, things like different types of programming like you and I both have suggested, could you see the WWE moving in that direction?
Yeah, I think ultimately they will. I really do. Part of my confidence in this is I feel like I'm on a hot streak of suggesting out-of-the-box ideas that companies seem to embrace. You know, months ago I was saying that WWE needed to get rid of the 6 months. They needed to partner with cable providers, and obviously they've only partnered with cable providers in Canada thus far, but they have gotten rid of the 6 months, and I think that was definitely a good idea. A couple months ago I mentioned UFC needed to start stacking cards. It appears that they are going to start stacking pay-per-views and kind of put Fox and Fight Pass stuff on the back burner a little bit. And so that's part of the reason I have confidence that this will actually happen, but I really believe that's the way they're going to go. You mentioned stuff like the Zack Ryder show, and that can certainly be helpful, but the key is it really has to be the core product. You know, it's Game of Thrones is the core of HBO. People don't really subscribe to HBO anymore just because they want to see a lot of movies. There may be a group of people that does that, but I would say by and large, the reason why people subscribe to HBO nowadays is because they're going to get Game of Thrones or, you know, Showtime with Homeland, Netflix with House of Cards, whatever it is. And those are just considered core things from the company. And the core of WWE is Raw. So I think it has to be something where the matches are built up on Raw and the matches are only seen if you're a network subscriber that Wednesday, that Tuesday, that Saturday. I don't care what day they do it, but I think that is what it needs to be. And I think that's the direction they'll end up going because they're already a touring product. I don't think it would be tremendously difficult to just tell the wrestlers, look, we're staying on the road for another day. We're going to have a Tuesday show every single week. It's going to air live on the network for an hour or 2 hours, and it's going to be like a pay-per-view, at least in terms of the fact that it's primarily wrestling, that it's less of the skits and the backstage and stuff like that. And I would expect for Raw, they'll move it primarily to skits and interviews and things like that. You got to have some matches. You know, the USA Network's not going to pay you what they're paying you without having some matches on there. But I really believe that's where they're going to go because I don't see any other alternative if the network is to succeed.
Also, what is important is the build to the shows that they put on the network. And they've been building this free month around the pay-per-view Survivor Series. What are your thoughts on the television promoting the Survivor Series? And is this a show interesting enough that it will keep people hooked, I guess?
Ultimately, no. I don't think it will. Because, you know, look, and this is one area I know I was doing a little bit of bragging earlier, talking about things that I've been at least sort of right about, but this is one area where I was really wrong. When I first heard several years ago that WWE was going to start up a network, they were going to put rank and file pay-per-views on the network. You know, back at that time, I think the idea was that maybe Rumble and Mania would be kept off the network. I thought it'd be a huge success. I said, wow, that sounds great. I would totally subscribe to a monthly network where I get the pay-per-views for free. But I realize over time now, over the last several months, that I'm the exception to the rule, that most people, they look very carefully, they go sort of line by line through their monthly family budget or their monthly personal budget. And when you see $9.99 on there and you say to yourself, that was one night. You know, even if $9.99 in the grand scheme of things might sort of be cheap for a night, it's certainly a lot less money than I would spend going to Buffalo Wild Wings to watch a UFC or something like that. It still just sticks out. You just say to yourself, gosh, I'm spending $9.99 and I'm basically watching this thing once a month. It just feels different than if you look at $9.99 and you say to yourself, that's a weekly thing. I have a set time. I really enjoy that every week. I really think that's what they have to do, and I honestly think that's what they are going to do.
And then what are your thoughts on them adjusting the price points ever so often? You can subscribe for a month for, I think it was $18 or $20, and then the constant adjustments, or do you think that stuff's so far out of visibility that no one's even paying attention to that?
You know, it was probably annoying for some people, but at least the last time I checked, and maybe I'm out of date because of all the adjustments, the last time I checked, it was down to $9.99 a month with no commitment. It was just you could go month by month for $9.99 a month. And I think that's what it needs to be, because it just look, you don't want to make people mad. You don't want to make your fans mad and have them feel like they're getting ripped off. And so if you tell someone $9.99 a month if you do a six-month commitment or $20 if you do a single month, you feel ripped off either way. If you're paying $20, you definitely feel ripped off because you're paying twice as much as you should. And if you do the six-month commitment and you just go 15 days without ever watching the network, then you feel ripped off. You're like, gosh, I'm stuck for 6 months and I haven't watched this darn thing in 15 days. And it's not unusual. I love wrestling. I love watching the old shows. It's not unusual even for a person like me to go 15 days without watching the network. And so, you know, again, I know I'm kind of beating a dead horse there, but that's why I believe they're going to go to a weekly thing. They may not go to my specific idea of filming house shows, but whether it's kind of what you were saying of adding like a weekly thing with like they did with Zack Ryder, or whether it's a weekly thing like they did with the Paul Heyman thing that was live, they're going to emphasize more, I think, weekly stuff.
Now, moving forward, a company that I don't think is trying to rip you off, Bellator, is putting on a big show tomorrow night in San Diego, and which we'll tip our hat as to when we're recording the show. But what are your thoughts on the show that Bellator is going head-to-head against UFC with tomorrow night?
I mean, it's fine. It's look, the man who holds all the cards right now is Chael Sonnen, because if Chael Sonnen's awesome on ESPN, and I believe he will be, if he decides that he wants to talk about Bellator, he gives them a shot to be legitimate. Because I still think people who are UFC fans tend to be a little bit more likely to be just general sports fans than WWE fans do. And so if you're a UFC fan, there's a definite chance that you're going to just be flipping through the channels and watching SportsCenter. And you're definitely going to listen if Chael Sonnen is on. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but you know, on the 6 p.m. SportsCenter, 6 p.m. Eastern, that is, SportsCenter, they frequently have on an expert in a certain sport, a NASCAR expert, a hockey expert, a basketball expert, or something like that, to talk about what's coming up, to hype the big events. And if Chael decides that he wants to hype Bellator, and I didn't watch SportsCenter tonight, so I don't know what he talked about, then I think that's going to make Bellator pretty legitimate. It's going to give Bellator a real chance. If not, then, you know, whatever. Bellator is just Viacom's little toy. If they decide to continue to subsidize it, it'll last. If they decide at some point that it's not worth spending the money on it for the ratings it provides, it's not going to last. But, you know, we saw what Scott Coker looks to do when he promotes a company. He's not the most ambitious guy in the world. He's not going to look to sort of truly compete. He's going to try to do a bunch of razzle-dazzle. I saw all over the internet that there was this whole big thing about doing a Monday Night Raw-style entrance stage, which for me personally is the absolute last thing I want for UFC. That to me, at least, makes it feel corny. It doesn't give me the same excitement as watching the guys walk in through the crowd the way that UFC does. I still really like the way that UFC does that. And so, you know, Scott Coker will do a bunch of razzle-dazzle, but I really don't think they're going to go anywhere unless Chael is their kingmaker, essentially.
Now, I thought you brought up an interesting point I hadn't really thought of. What was ESPN's end game as far as hiring Chael? Because MMA coverage had always been on the back burner since, in my opinion, they canceled MMA Live many years ago and John Anik and others left for the UFC. So what do you think their end game with such a big splash in hiring Chael was?
I think it's just they – ESPN's an awesome company. They want to be number one in sports. And if they can't own the property, and obviously for at least the next few years, they cannot own UFC, they still want to be relevant. And, look, ESPN shows zero professional hockey games per year. They don't show any NHL. And they still have some of the best NHL content on TV. They have Barry Melrose, who was a commentator with them back when they owned the rights to the live games for the National Hockey League. He comes on during SportsCenter, and he'll talk about what's going on in hockey or a big rivalry or a big controversy, or he'll get in there for the playoffs and be on nightly. And I think it's just ESPN's general commitment to excellence. They look at it as, if we're going to be the worldwide leader in sports, we have to cover everything that people view as a legitimate sport. And up until Fox made the mistake of letting, what in my opinion is a mistake, of letting Chael go, ESPN just didn't have the talent available. I didn't think there was a guy out there that ESPN could bring in that they felt confident would be awesome on TV doing those little 2 and 3 minute segments hyping up a big event. And I think they view Chael as that guy.
What's interesting is actually before this, I think they were using Gilbert Melendez, but then Gilbert Melendez was also on a lot of Fox coverage as well. What is going to be interesting moving forward is that the people they surround Chael with, and will they allow Chael to, and will Chael want to maybe discuss a different side of the company, right? Because when you're working for Fox, you're allowed to. Chael definitely talked about steroids on television, but I wonder if he'll be allowed to be a contrarian to the UFC's narrative, or if he'll even have interest and want to go in that direction.
Yeah, I mean, that obviously the question there is, does he want to fight in UFC? That's what I think the big question is. If he wants to fight in UFC, and I have a feeling that he does, I think his long-term goal is to do 45-year-old Anderson Silva versus 40-year-old Chael Sonnen, or whatever their respective ages would be at that point, as one big last money-making match. And I think he believes that Anderson parties enough that he would, that the Chael would be able to get his win and go out on a high note. If Chael holds that hope, and I believe he does, then I don't think that he's going to do what you're talking about. I don't think that he's going to bring up things that UFC would really not want him to bring up. But it's possible that he doesn't. It's possible that he does really look at it as his MMA career is over. And look, if he looks at it as his MMA career is over, I really believe that he's just going to stick with ESPN. I mean, ESPN is a great gig. If he is good, which I believe he will be, he's going to get paid. He, you know, may not be multi-millions of dollars per year, but he'll get a pretty good salary. He'll get to travel to whatever big events he needs to travel to. He'll be able to talk about pre-fight and post-fight big events. He'll have the freedom to talk about UFC. He'll have the freedom to talk about Bellator or any other competitor that comes up along the way. ESPN is a phenomenal gig if you're good enough at it. And so if he does not have designs on fighting, I think he'll absolutely be willing to talk about the type of stuff that you're referencing.
I certainly hope so, because I mean, I remember I believe it was about a year ago, UFC had they had gotten upset publicly at Errol Helwani for attending a Bellator press event. And I really look forward to the day that someone feels that they can give fair coverage to the UFC, and hopefully ESPN becomes an outlet for that, to where you can talk about things like this Saturday's card, which I don't believe is the card they would have necessarily wanted to enter into the Mexican market with. What's interesting, do you believe that UFC is kind of putting the cart before the horse? I mean, I frequently hear the name Julio Cesar Chavez and what a big star he was in Mexico, but it was an organic creation, you know, and Morales and Barrera, all those were organic creations, and the UFC going into Mexico feels a little forced to me. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, I mean, I'm okay with them going in, but I may be, you know, I may be using anecdotal evidence for that. The crowd when Kane beat Brock was just incredible. It was like a Stone Cold Steve Austin crowd, and you know, that's a tremendous compliment. You know, it's just the Anaheim Pond went absolutely nuts when he beat him, and when we went out to the concourse afterwards, there were you know people flying Mexican flags. And look, I think, at least certainly in Southern California, the UFC's fan base has started to trend more Latino. When I went to a little press event that they did hyping up the Jones versus Cormier fight back before it got postponed, you know, this was like the day after they had their little brawl in Las Vegas. There were fans allowed into that event, and it probably was a majority Latino. It might not have been exactly a majority. I didn't do a head count, but they have a big Latino fan base. I'm not familiar enough with Mexico as opposed to Mexican American to know how well that translates, but I'm fine with it. You know, go into Mexico. They had the match they wanted, but it obviously didn't work out because Kane got injured. I don't have any problem whatsoever with them going into Mexico. Again, the big thing for me is just make sure they stack 4 to 8 cards per year. That's kind of the key thing is that I think they need to do that, and everything else, you know, I kind of don't have a strong opinion on one way or another.
If you were running the Ultimate Fighting Championship, that would be your goal moving forward, is to present 4 to 6 cards a year that had 2 to 3 main events deep on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, obviously you hope to expand upon that number. You hope to do as many of those as you possibly can, depending on how the fights go, depending on how injuries go, depending on how many stars are made. But yes, I would say you want to try to go to stacked cards. And it's a little bit of a risky move because to play devil's advocate, there's the school of thought that just their pay-per-view is dead, and that it's never going to get back to, you know, the older numbers where they could get, let's say, a minimum of 300,000 people to buy a card if the people thought the card was good. Maybe they are going to stack a card and they might draw half of that. They might draw 150,000 people, and then obviously my idea would not look good in hindsight. But I think it's a risk that's worth taking. I think that there are a lot of latent UFC fans out there. There are a lot of people who have some degree of interest in the sport. I think there's a lot of people who have gotten turned off by the thinness of a lot of cards. Again, purely on anecdotal stuff, that's definitely the case with pretty much all of my friends who are ex-UFC fans. Like right now for UFC, it kind of feels like WWE felt in 2006, where I had a ton of friends who were really into it 5 years previous, and they're all gone. And if I mention something to them about UFC, they have some degree of interest, but they don't have a strong interest in coming back. Number one, because the stars are gone. You know, that's something you can't help. Liddell and GSP and Randy Couture could only last so long. But then number two, because they would watch a pay-per-view and they would see 3, 4, 5 fights that they just didn't care about. They would only get 1 or 2 fights that they actually did, and that was a huge turnoff for them. So I think it's a risk they have to take to stack the cards.
What is your thoughts on the utilization of Fight Pass, and basically, do you think it's effective?
Yeah, I mean, Fight Pass is fine. I'm not one of those people who is with the narrative that UFC's doing it right and WWE's doing it wrong. I think WWE is doing what's right for their business. It's just some of the execution is off. I think UFC's doing what's right for their business, because the way I look at it is UFC is still an event-based business. WWE is a serial business at this point. And for WWE, being a serial business means you got fans that tune in week by week by week. You know, that's why I said earlier, I think the secret to the network, or the key to the network, is getting a weekly live show featuring matches that were hyped up on Raw. For UFC, it's still event-based. And you know, I think they can draw virtually nothing on television. And as long as they get a couple Sports Center segments, as long as they get enough online buzz and things like that, they can still draw close to a million pay-per-view buys, maybe even over a million, if they have the right card that resonates with people. And so I think Fight Pass is fine because it doesn't compromise that, as long as they don't let it compromise it. You know, if they start pulling fights from pay-per-view to make sure that the Fight Pass cards look better, I think that would be a mistake. But as long as they keep going where they're going, the way they're going, where the Fight Pass cards are really, for the most part, guys that are not near the title picture. They're either guys who have been up close to the title picture and are kind of on their way down, or guys that are still a few fights away from the title picture. As long as that's what they do on Fight Pass, I'm fine with it. I mean, they could run a Fight Pass show every week. I mean, that's fine with me, just as long as they hold out, you know, 3, 4, 5 good fights for the stacked pay-per-views.
And one thing I really enjoy about Fight Pass, the European commentary team, it's really different. And when they have the European ring announcer, I mean, it just makes it really feel like you're watching a different show. You know,
yeah.
UFC has really UFC has become really bland with the commentary team. I used to really enjoy Kenny Florian, but now he doesn't really stand out as much to me. I actually enjoy him more when he commentates now for Jiu-Jitsu, when he does Metamoris. Brian Stann, I've never really been the biggest Brian Stann fan on commentary. And Rogan and Goldberg, you know, people used to criticize Mike Tenay and Taz for as far as they had fallen. I mean, Joe Rogan and Mike Goldberg were really... I mean, do you remember when WWE actually tried to hire Mike Goldberg? Mike Goldberg was the pinnacle at that point of commentary. And, I mean, they're, as a team, calling them a shell of themselves would be an insult to the shell of themselves.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's just, you know, maybe the amount of time and maybe a little bit of wear and tear from doing so many shows. I'm not a big hater of Goldberg and Rogan. I think they're fine. I mean, I guess the one adjustment I would recommend would be reserving that team for pay-per-views. The trick there is that, you know, Mike Goldberg has to make a living. Joe Rogan can make a living doing his podcast and doing stand-up comedy. But Mike Goldberg has to make a living, and if you tell him, hey, you're only going to be commentating on 8 or 10 or 12 events a year, he might not be particularly happy with that. He might go seek out another, you know, he might go back and try to be the Minnesota Wild play-by-play, Minnesota Wild hockey team play-by-play guy, so that he gets more regular work. So, you know, but that's my sort of perfect world scenario, that if Goldberg's willing to accept it, I would say just try to cut it back a little bit. I actually think, you know, checking to see if you can get Just Gonson for the Fox shows isn't the worst idea. Just Gonson just left the soccer telecast for Fox, and so he should have a little bit of a lighter load. It wouldn't shock me if he'd be open to doing UFC for just the Fox shows. And I think that would help a little bit if they would lighten the load on those guys. I hate to trash those guys because I still kind of like them as a pairing.
I just Joe Rogan really appealed to me in the beginning because he had that quality like Jim Ross where he felt like he was telling you the truth, and then he totally. I just feel like he has no credibility when he does commentary. I don't believe him, and I think that's really bad when it comes to commentary. But speaking of commentary, and we'll leave on this note, Global Force Wrestling announced that they are promoting and they will put on pay-per-view the New Japan Dome show for the first year in America, and it will be a commentary team of right now Jim Ross, and everyone's assuming that one other person will accompany him in the booth in Tokyo, Japan. What are your thoughts on Jim Ross calling this show, and what are your thoughts on you know what, first question before I go to this. Okay, what were your thoughts on Mike Goldberg's Twitter rant after his NFL performance?
If I was Fox, I would have completely pulled him from all Fox shows, period. You know, you can do that stuff if you're awesome. But part of that is self-serving because I've thought that UFC could use a different voice for the Fox shows, but I completely would have pulled him. I mean, look, it does bug me sometimes when people are nitpicky, when you have a person who's a good announcer, but they make a little mistake or they say something a little bit wrong and the internet or just people in general kind of jump all over them. Generally, I don't like that type of thing, but at least from the clips I saw of that Mike Goldberg football announcing, that was some of the most unbelievable stuff I've seen. I mean, you just don't see that type of stuff where a guy is that ill-prepared, which is the exact opposite of what I expect from Jim Ross. I think Jim Ross is going to prepare like a maniac for this Tokyo Dome show. And so, yeah, I would have let Goldberg go. You know, if you're the best commentator on the network, maybe you can get away with that stuff. But, yeah, I would have completely dumped him. Yeah, I mean, as far as Jim Ross goes, you know, maybe I'm going to end up being wrong about this, but it seems like a cute little thing. I don't know if it's actually going to add any buys because I've had people tell me, like, I think you may have met him at some point, or at least you know who he is, the guy Front Row Brian. He posts his Front Row Brian on Twitter.
Yes, I follow him on Twitter.
Yeah, okay. So you know, he had that conversation, I remember, a while back about how, well, you know, the Japan shows seem awesome, but he needs an American play-by-play guy. And I've heard that from other people as well. He was the first one I heard it from. That's why I mentioned him. But I think that may be a case of people saying one thing, but maybe not necessarily following through on it. I don't doubt for a second that he thinks that he thinks, oh, this wrestling's awesome, and if only they had a good commentator, I would buy it or I would watch it. But I think at the end of the day, it's probably not going to make a huge difference. And the other thing, just for me selfishly, I kind of like the Japanese commentators. It brings back fond memories of Renton, you know, driving to Little Tokyo here in Los Angeles while I was in college and renting the New Japan and the All Japan shows for that week, and then what eventually became the NOAH shows for that week. And so I really I kind of have a fondness for the Japanese language commentary, and so from that perspective I'm not a big fan of it personally, but you know, look, it's a venture. I don't want to, you know, trash someone's idea before seeing exactly what it's going to come out to be, but I don't think it's going to make a big difference. No.
What's interesting to me is that just the explosion of this company to where now they're promoting a pay-per-view in America. And I understand that it's a different time in pay-per-view in America. The threshold for success is a lot lower than what it's been in years previous. But the fact that New Japan is seemingly putting on bigger shows than what they have been in the past maybe 10-15 years in that country. Currently they're booking a lot of big arenas for their big shows, and with what essentially is American independent talent, because there is no there's only one company in this country for people to go. And it's just interesting that in 2014 that the company is seeing such a resurgence to where they're able to make this possible, put on a pay-per-view in America. And you know, there will be, you know, people who buy it, you know. I'm sure it'll be fans already accustomed to the product. I don't know how many fans that aren't accustomed to the product will purchase this pay-per-view, even if it is led by Jim Ross. But it'll be it's an interesting time, I think, in the company's history to where they're able to do this. Now, this is kind of a – do you think Jim Ross is kind of a gimmick now moving forward? Because he's not – you know, if you have this fresh product like New Japan Pro Wrestling, is he the right guy to provide the commentary? Would you almost rather sell the pay-per-view and have an up-and-comer that you could find, or someone that you could give a newer opportunity from to call this product to where you can really make it your own? Because, I mean, Jim Ross will never be associated with this product. So, I mean, is he kind of like a gimmick?
Yeah, well, look, obviously he's a gimmick, and you know, my gut reaction, I hate to say this, but yeah, that he is too old. Man, I hate to say this because I love Jim Ross and I think he does a great job, but the reality is I do think he's lost a step. I don't think hopefully he hears this and uses this as motivation and shoves it right up my you know what. But look, that's the reality. I've seen some little gimmicky stuff he's done, like a Canadian website or hockey channel or something like that showed him calling big moments in hockey, and when I was watching that, it just felt like a guy who is now a little bit past his prime. And I think the proper role for him is the way that Fox was using him. I like the idea of having him write columns. I love the idea of him being on the field before a college football game and just during the college football pregame show doing a little on-the-field report and saying, you know, this is what I think is going to happen in the Texas versus Ohio State game or whoever it is that's playing. And I just think that's a better role for him currently at his age. And I really feel bad about saying that. I mean, I know that, you know, that can tend to be very offensive when you say that about people, that, you know, when you imply essentially that they're over the hill and blah, blah, blah. And look, like, Marv Albert is older than Jim Ross, and basketball is a high-energy sport and everything like that, and Marv Albert still does a fantastic job. So I don't mean to say that it's just the exact age that Jim Ross is, but, yeah, I feel like it's a gimmick. I feel like it's you know, I don't think it's necessarily going to be a terrible thing, but I feel like his best role is elsewhere. I think his best role is exactly what I mentioned. I think just doing smaller stuff, you know, the way he does with Fox is probably a little bit better.
And unfortunately, due to time constraints, we were unable to get into TNA potentially heading to Destination America.
What's Destination America? Someone told me about this.
The program that I'm aware of that airs on that television is Barbecue Pitmasters, where they'll have barbecue cooks from across the country compete in a cook-off that is judged by three well-known barbecue cook-off guys. And I enjoy barbecue, and I enjoy watching programming about barbecue, so I've actually watched the program. But that is the only show I'm aware of this channel has. I believe it's an offshoot of the Discovery Network. And because you know, that is the thing to do in television, is to, you know, have a couple of premier channels and then have four or five other ancillary channels and sell it to the cable companies as a package. And Destination America is a package program.
Got it. Yeah, I mean, I was once a judge in a barbecue competition, and it did not end well. I ended up upchucking most of what they forced me to eat. Let me tell you something. I don't know if Destination America does Texas barbecue, but I really feel for people if they are forced to eat Texas barbecue. They just cook their darn stuff too hot down there in Texas. I don't know what's wrong with people down there. They need to learn how to slow cook stuff. And that is throwing down the gauntlet, by the way. If anyone's from Texas and that listens to this, your barbecue stinks. You need to start cooking stuff slower. Maybe I just had a bad experience at the barbecue that I had to judge down there. It was in just outside of Corpus Christi. But, fast cooking, it's no good.
Ben Miller, barbecue judge. And if other people are interested in not only your musings on barbecue, but your thoughts on other things, where can they go to find out more?
Twitter handle is at Ben Miller. One word, no underscores, no nothing. You mentioned the Bucks blog, bucksforest.com. I occasionally write wrestling and MMA-related stuff at the Wrestling Observer website. You can either go to WrestlingObserver.com or F4WOnline.com. And, you know, my real job is working in wireless networking. So if any of you are interested about wireless networking, I also keep up a blog on that. Its name is sniffwifi.com, SNIFFWIFI.com. It's not a hacker site or anything like that. I sometimes get unsolicited emails from people looking to do wireless hacking. It's not that, but yeah, it's that site. So there you go. Those are three places where you can read my ramblings.
Well, there you go, and you can listen to the show on iTunes, keyword OWW Radio, and you can download the show from the website, onlineworldofwrestling.com. And thank you very much, Ben, for joining me, and thank you very much for listening. This has been Alex Goff.